This week's episode of North Carolina Theater Stories is brought to you in part by Walter Guy Jewelers, located at 210 Hay Street in downtown Fayetteville. Walter Guy Jewelers specializes in antique and unusual jewelry. Founder Walter Guy Sr. established his first jewelry store in 1963.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all know me, back where the girls all bow.
This is the North Carolina Theater Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. We're coming to you from a 100-year-old house, former home of the Gilbert Theater, here in historic Haymont in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is show number 19. Our guest today is Victor Rivera. Victor comes freshly from Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia. He graduated from Appalachian State University with a BA in Theater Arts, summa cum laude. Well, Victor, welcome.
Thank you so much.
I've always wanted to meet someone with those Latin word names behind their name.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. The summa cum is one, and summa cum laude is even better, right?
Cum laude is just pretty good, but summa cum laude is the top
of
class.
Of course, thank you.
With highest honor.
Showing my ignorance.
No.
Well, it shows that I didn't come anywhere near that. It was my college career was too sad to relate.
Oh.
Anyway, here we are at our wonderful round table here, Victor, and you are looking, we've just been listening to a song, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
Our wonderful theme song, Longing to Be on Old Broadway,
mm-hmm.
by Cole Porter. Now, I assume at your tender age and you have not been anywhere near Broadway or even off Broadway.
I have seen Broadway.
You've seen Broadway.
I've seen a lot of shows on Broadway.
A lot of shows. So you have a real sense of the quality there and everything.
Mm-hmm.
If you could do anything you wanted on Broadway, what would it be? Act, direct, scene design?
I would love to do a play. I would love to act in a play on Broadway.
Have you chosen one?
I actually have a list of the plays that I would love to do, like my dream roles before I stop acting.
Okay, what's one? Or do you want to not
share it? Yeah, let's see. I have it on my phone, actually. Yay, technology. For Young Frankenstein, that's one of the musicals that I've always wanted to do, and to be Igor was the perfect choice.
Uh-huh.
Other musicals, The Book of Mormon, I actually auditioned for that twice and got called back as one of the roles for the replacement of the Broadway cast.
Uh-huh.
And then for the national tours.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah?
Well, congrats.
So which role were you aiming for?
For Arnold Cunningham.
Oh, okay. That was the funnier one.
Yeah, the funnier one.
Sick.
That's in my wheelhouse.
Nice.
Now, something that James forgot to mention was we'd be very careful of noise on this table. I'm surprised he hasn't given you a dirty look already, but this is very sensitive. Even something kind of like this, I dropped the gong for the gong, and you get a dirty look. So we're going to watch our hands on the table.
I'm going to make the background music will be drumming. So
there we go, percussive.
Anyway, so yeah, Book of Mormon,
mm-hmm.
and it'll probably still be playing when you're ready.
Yeah.
You have been fulfilled one of them down in the provinces with Young Frankenstein, the musical.
Yes.
Right here in the dear old Gilbert, playing Igor.
Yes, that's pronounced Igor. Exactly right.
Well, I just love with what you're doing with it, Victor. There are 12 performances in this run. I've already seen 7 of them. I'm going to end up seeing 11 of them. I've been sitting in the front row. Maybe that's not very nice of me. When there are many,
of course, it's your theater. You can do whatever you want.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
It's just an absolute joy, and we're going to talk more about that as our time together goes on, and during call board and so on, about what performances are remaining. But right now, I just want to tell you that you, along with so many others in the cast, are just superb. Now, you see in front of you a red box.
Yes, I do.
In a moment, not yet.
Okay.
In a moment, you are going to open that box. You're going to find something in there. And veteran listeners to our show know I'm about to tell you that it could be anything. It could be a postage stamp. It could be a shrunken head. but you're going to find something in there, and you're going to take it out very briskly and describe it.
Okay.
Briskly. And then you're going to tell a story. We're testing your improv impulses. We know how good you are with when you're scripted. Mm-hmm. But I have a feeling that you are very good with those little bits, the things you add on one night and they're not there the next night and so on. I've been watching you working, and so I can see you have that ability. So are you ready?
I'm very ready.
All right. Open that box.
All right. And carefully putting down the lid so it doesn't disturb the table. And inside, it is a little keychain, and it has a golden emblem in it, and it says República Argentina, and that is, of course, from the Dominican Republic. And, okay, this, actually, I have one of these on my keys, which is fantastic. Mine was not from Argentina. It was from a thrift store, because I actually got, I went inside, and there was a pile of jewelry, and there was nice rings and stuff, but there was this, which also has a sundial, the same one.
Oh my.
Yeah, and it's remarkable because you can actually buy these in the streets of Argentina because they go in and they have little the rays of sunlight coming from the centerpiece, and they take a little saw and then they carve into it. And that's what the intricacies are. And it's really quite well done, actually. And this is a 10-piece centavo, which is on the back, and it's kind of like their quarter or their peso.
Well, congratulations.
Wait, is that money?
That's money?
Yeah, it's a money in a like a keychain. Spend
that somewhere? Well, I want you to keep that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now you have a mate.
Yay!
If that story was true, suspect it was true. I would like to pride myself on knowing the stories that are true.
Tell people you got it around the time the Pope visited America.
Yes, I did.
Then people will think, associated. Oh, clearly this was a gift from the Pope.
Not only was I not 500 miles near the Pope, but... Thank you very much.
Well, you're entirely welcome. Victor, I'm so thrilled that you're here. As I say, it was absolute joy watching. I can't take my eyes off you on the stage. And I love that scene when they're playing charades, and when the monster is throttling... Dear Artem Frankenstein, and you're all trying to get thinking you're playing charades, and I'm old enough to really enjoy when you say flying down to Rio.
Yeah,
and that's an early Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers.
I actually did some character research, and I find that out.
Did you?
Yeah,
and well, I was there. anyway, I've been longing to put my oar in, my finger in the water on this one, and whisper to Matt when he finally give the herbert hypodermic to the monster and he collapses, that Matt then turns to you and says flying down to Rio. You know, I think that would be hilarious.
That would be really funny.
It would be hilarious. Yeah. I still make my nerve up and do that. I'm having to be very careful. let's talk a little bit about the film, and not verses, but the film and the musical play.
Okay.
Now, you in your bio for the show, I see that you play homage to Marty Feldman.
Mm-hmm.
And why did you do that?
It's very appealing to me in theater and some of the roles I've taken, and it's been about 10 roles now, that my character is directly based off of someone from fiction or directly from a book or a play.
Oh my God.
So I think it's respectful and as much fun for me as it is acting it to pay homage to them.
Yes.
It's dedicated to Mr. Feldman.
Yes. Well, he was... You can't. You were not born with those eyes. I'm sure he feels that he was cursed with those eyes most of the time. But he certainly used them to great advantage.
Oh, yes.
In that part. But you made the part your own, superbly, and with your physicality and timing. It was. But anyway. But now. Okay. Back to the film and the musical. You know, Robin has, every night at the curtain speech, she's asked people to raise their hand if they've seen the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, that seems to be one movie that really has, and this is the mid-70s, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That even all ages seem to be raising their hand. And I look, turn around and see all these people saying, yes, I've, so people know the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be a double-edged sword, can it? I think in the case of this, it has really worked to the manage a box office.
Oh, yes.
For the musical.
There's the pool of, oh, I recognize that movie.
And I loved it. Let's see it with the addition of song and dance.
Exactly.
But so much of the dialogue comes straight from the film script,
mm-hmm.
because Mel Brooks
did
both.
Yes.
The screenplay and the, as well as the libretto, the book for the musical. So this is one of those very, very happy weddings of film and something on stage.
Oh yeah.
Now here you are. You mentioned with this at your ripe old age, this all the number of plays that are under your belt, Shakespeare and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Here you are on the Gilbert stage. Now, you were just taken on a tour downstairs to see the original theater.
Yes, that was lovely.
The stage is 11 and a half by 13.
Uh-huh.
And you can't believe James was on that several times.
Oh, excellent.
He was 17 years old. And but we did really fine work there.
Mm. Well, with the passion that you already have shown, with just your love of theater, then I would imagine nothing less.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
There we are with that tiny stage. Well, now here you are performing on another stage.
Mm-hmm.
And many measurements would be considered intimate, small, mm-hmm. 25 or 25, with no stage left, no stage right, and a very tiny stage, upstage, backstage. But so what's it been like? Is this your smallest stage so far?
I want to say no. I've acted in smaller. I've had no backstage compared to the luxurious dressing rooms that we have. And we also have hallways. But I have done tours in college where we did children's theater. And we went around to elementary schools in Western North Carolina. And we perform in gymatoriums, which is an auditorium stuck in a gym. Yeah. And it's just like a closet. So there's no space. Like, you have set up one curtain, and that's everything backstage.
Uh-huh.
So as much as this is a beautiful, intimate space, but it's nowhere near my smallest.
Well, thank you for that brilliant, intimate space. You're seating 99. Anyway, we seated 40 downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, 99, and we had been filling most of those seats for the entire run.
Yes, every Friday has been sold out.
And I bet that's going to continue for this coming weekend. What's it like to you to be able to see that many faces in the audience?
Well, I have performed in front of one person to thousands. So, thankfully, the Gilbert lights are so bright that you can't see the faces in the first place, mm-hmm. which is really good, because that helps with stage nerves and stuff.
Yes.
But I'm comfortable enough with being on stage that I can look and make audiences directly, or make jokes directly to the uh-huh. audiences and make eye contact. Mm-hmm. And it's great to see their smiling faces and to see that instant reaction.
Yes. We've been doing a lot in the recent weeks on our show, Victor, talking about audience feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the feedback specifically you've been getting this in this musical.
Okay.
What's it been like? You're saying them, but there's this big circle. We have a play, we have actors doing things, mm-hmm. we have the audience. It's this great circle of giving and giving and giving.
Oh, yeah.
And the audience is responsible too.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you getting back?
For every laughter that they have, that heightens the energy, and so that drives me to want to push myself to give a better performance. So that's a positive feedback loop. The more they laugh, the more I want to make them laugh.
Yeah.
Something I had mentioned before we started recording was that this was an unusually physical performance. I hadn't expected you would be throwing yourself literally so much into it. And I imagine that energy you're getting from the audience sort of gives you that.
Absolutely, yes. That means, for me, the more they laugh, then, like, for example, one of the physicality that I do is I bend over, like I'm about a foot and a half, 2 feet shorter than I actually am. I'm 5'8" in real life, but Igor is like 3 foot tall. So the more they laugh and respond to the hump jokes or him being 8 heads shorter than Frederick, then that encourages me to bend even lower down.
Well, so the physicality, so the loop, the circle of laughter. Have you ever been in a situation where the audience is not doing its job?
Yes.
What kind of reaction does that?
It's not so much they're not doing their job, but they're just not vocal. They could be quietly appreciating the show, which for a movie, that's great. Because the actors aren't there and they filmed it months beforehand, but to have the actors instantly, directly, actively across from you, and you're not laughing or vocalizing, then it just adds an extra challenge.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different drive where it's like, all right, well, I'm going to push myself to then reach out to them.
Yes, just get some response or it kills you.
Yeah.
Occasionally, I'm happy to say not very often, people reading their program.
Yeah.
I think this is very demoralizing.
When I see that in the audience, I think that they're reading the program to try and find who plays Igor, and they're like, who is that wonderful actor? I want to read.
All right. That's the attitude.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Now, so acting, has it been in your soul ever since you were 5 years old?
Yes, in fact. My father is from Mexico, and he actually went through high school and college being a mime. So I have pantomime in my blood, and he taught me everything he knows. And so since elementary school, I've been showing, like, mime. Yes. And I've noticed then I grew up with an appreciation of physicality, and I love when things are exact and you can see movements. And I think I add that to everything I do. You can't see this in the podcast, but I'm talking with my hands the entire time. And my mother also, she was an actress, so through high school then she was in various plays. And she's told me through my education that if she had as encouraging people as I have had in my life, then she would have pursued it more.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Well, do you like the French actor Jacques Tati? Do you know him?
I do not know him. Not yet.
Mr. Hulot's Holiday, he made several movies. Jacques Tati.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of my favorites.
That's cool.
And of course, who's that famous mime?
Marcel Marceau.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it seems to me that you are on a track here to have a very joyful life.
I am very happy right now. I've said to multiple people in multiple venues that Young Frankenstein at Gilbert Theater has been the most fun I have had with theater in the past year.
Oh,
hands down.
Wonderful.
And I've been in 10 plus shows in the past year. So.
Well, that's music to my ears. One of the things years ago I started telling directors, Victor, was the process is as important as the product.
Absolutely.
And that we've all been in situations where all hell is just hell, and rehearsals and all kinds of bad stuff going on. And then the opening in the play, everybody comes to pulls together, and that's the opening night. People say, oh, wonderful, wonderful. Yes, great.
Yeah.
But, however, if you only knew.
Yes, I've had many, many of those instances.
Well, I'm glad to see that that is still the case with you. So your body, how do you keep trim? How do you keep agile?
Trim, thank you very much.
Trim and agile.
Well, I'm young, so that helps with regeneration. I don't know. I don't have a secret. Mm-hmm. Eating and sleeping.
Uh-huh. Well, as the years pass, you will devise other ways of making sure stays that way. Well, how do you handle repetition? Do you find that in a long run, like the Gilbert runs are 12 performances, mm-hmm. But two on Saturday, or uh-huh. in this case, do you ever find yourself feeling tired or oh no, another performance?
I have felt for other shows that had 3-week runs that, oh no, here's another show. Uh-huh. For Young Frankenstein, I am tired, but only because it's an exhausting performance and I love doing it. Yeah. But repetition for theater, I feel that for all the rehearsals that you do, you get to explore, and all the repetition helps you to hone in on the best moments, because I'm making a transfer into film also, and film has none of the rehearsal. They don't have the repetition, the luxury of getting it into your body and having that muscle memory. Yeah. So that's the thing that I miss the most in film work and on camera, is not having it so familiar to you. The rehearsals is like, okay, oh, right, I forgot that one part. So I have more rehearsals to practice, mm-hmm. where film is kind of like, all right, well, we have 2 hours to film this. Good luck.
You'll have to talk with Bob. He had many years as a professional film actor.
Oh, excellent. I would love to talk.
Yeah, by all means. So now what, you've been in all these plays recently. Mm-hmm. What makes a story worth telling to you?
Passion. I don't think subject matter, I don't think there's anything that should not be written about. You should be mindful of it, but if someone's passionate about a person or a place or an event, then as long as they put that desire through to their performance in the production, then I think the sky's the limit.
All right. We're all storytellers. That's what we do.
Yeah.
I've been a storyteller all my life. I'll get it right sooner or later. Sometimes I will tell an anecdote at some party or something. Middle of the night, I'll think, oh my God, that timing was off on that. I mean, this is at a party, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
It never stops. It's just a curse.
I should have
abbreviated that. my notes that I have for this portion, how do you prepare yourself in seconds before going on? Do you do anything special, or is it just what?
It varies from play to play. Some I'm looking at a picture perhaps that inspires me, or it's very drilled in us during our programs at theater education, where you have a moment before, so you marinate in like your character circumstances and then you enter. For Young Frankenstein, my basic instinct is my fly up, is my hump on the right shoulder, or the left one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Marinate in circumstances. That's a marvelous phrase.
Oh, thank you.
You should copyright that.
Trademark.
Now, you know, something, Bob tells the story of being in the green room with for heaven's sakes, I can't think of his name. He's famous movie actor. It'll come to me in a minute.
Jack Lemmon. I remember the story.
and Jack Lemmon, the moment on stage, or before doing a scene in a movie, I guess, he would say to himself, "It's magic time."
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah. All right. Okay, so much for you.
Oh, good.
No, I'm just kidding. Now, it's all about you tonight,
oh,
Victor.
Thank you.
All about you, believe it or not, even though it may appear that I'm trying to...
Not at all. I'm learning, too.
Now we come to monologue or Shakespeare sonnet time.
Woo!
And you're telling me that you have a monologue.
I do, in fact, have a monologue.
And it's memorized?
Yeah, well, hopefully.
I don't see you reaching for a paper.
I do not.
Or you're, like, one of our guests took out his laptop.
Oh.
What is it?
This is from Measure for Measure, so it's not Romeo and Juliet or Hamlet or the Scottish play. And it is from Act 3, Scene 1, and I was actually the character, Claudio, earlier this year with Bear Theater in Raleigh. So here we go.
All right.
Should I set the scene?
Please set the scene.
Okay, so Claudio, by Act 3, he's arrested and imprisoned for getting his girlfriend pregnant. And even though he makes an argument that she is as good as his wife, but by law, they're not technically married. So the new duke, he's being very hard on everyone. So he sentenced me to death because I had fun. So, and then the other part of that is then my sister, Isabella, she has the power to save me from death if she sleeps with the Duke, which is, it's one of the problem plays.
And that's, is this an updated version?
This was a not Shakespeare summary. So,
all right, are
yes,
you ready?
Yes, I am.
It's good to be Duke.
It's good to be Duke, yes. I but to die and go we know not where, to lie in cold obstruction and to rot, this sensible warm motion to become a kneaded clod, and the delighted spirit to bathe in fiery floods, or to reside in thrilling region of thick-ribbed ice, to be imprisoned in the viewless winds and blown with restless violence round about the pendant world, or to be worse than worst of those that lawless and uncertain thoughts imagine howling is too terrible. The weariest and most loathed worldly life that age, ache, penury, and imprisonment can lay on nature is a paradise to what we fear of death.
Oh, beautiful.
Well, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you so much. Well, that was a masterclass in miniature there. Oh, I'm going to be, but you'll be back to Georgia or Atlanta. But I just recently bought a group of CDs called Playing Shakespeare,
mm-hmm,
by the Royal Shakespeare. It's out of the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Oh, I love that.
And did you use those in college? I'm told they're used at Fayetteville State. They're using them, but I'm going to be asking actors who are going to be in Titus,
mm-hmm,
or something for Sweet Tea coming up, and we'll have some master classes down in the old theater using those wonderful DVDs.
Ooh,
I've been
great
listening to them, and this is Ian McClellan
and
and David Suchet and that whole crowd and Judi Dench and so on. Anyway, Playing Shakespeare, if you're listening to this and want to be part of that master class, with Robin often in attendance or Jeremy Fiebig, let us know. All right, we're now coming to our free for all. This is where we invite James to put his oar in. But James, I'm so glad that Victor really threw himself into our interview tonight by coming wearing part of his costume. He's wearing his hump. and some of the capes and so on.
Yes, I am.
And that hood, and I admire you so. I know this is radio.
Thank you.
But still, it gets everybody in the spirit.
Well, thank you.
And just don't hit me in the face with your cape, please.
I'm sorry. That was one time.
I know how you are on stage whisking that around.
This is where you respond, what hump?
What hump? Well, oh.
What hump, exactly. But I just wish that James had come more in the spirit of the evening and not worn a tie-dye t-shirt of some of rather dubious provenance. And James, I'm going to have to call your mother. I'm sorry.
They say the mind goes first.
I have your mother on speed now. Now, the topic tonight is colorblind casting.
Mm-hmm.
And I've asked James, if he's still speaking to me, to contribute. Let's just talk about that. Any thoughts on colorblind casting? Have you been in some shows where they threw caution to the wind and here that the mother, white mother and father is a black child and whatever? Have you had?
Not so much. I did think about this a lot, and I would like to preface that I am a Caucasian actor, so I can only speak to a Caucasian male actor's mm-hmm. point of view. I would love to see more colorblind casting and gender fluidity in casting, because there are some amazing actresses and some amazing non-Caucasian actors that I think would do wonders with roles.
Yes.
Since my dad is from Mexico, then I'm half Mexican, but I do not look it. I'm very white. And actually that has played against me because I was in a new work earlier this year and called Monumental with Meredith College. And I played a Cuban Navy personnel
mm-hmm.
and I did not look Cuban. I looked like the white guy and used to trying to look Cuban. So it works in reverse a little bit too. Mm-hmm. So,
I actually was thinking about this earlier. It is obviously a sensitive subject. I feel that a director or a casting director should definitely should consider whether or not it makes sense to the story at mm-hmm. all. Like, for example, whereas I think, you know, you could have a black actor play Igor just mm-hmm. as well. It might not work to cast a black actor or a Hispanic actor or an Arab actor as Atticus Fitch, because uh-huh. that
yeah.
story
yes.
clearly deals
good point. Yeah.
directly with race. Mm-hmm. Now, Young Frankenstein has a bit of colorblind casting. You cast a green actor for Young Frankenstein.
Yes, we did. We were very thankful.
Well,
that he
and the
have.
Green people are just applauding us for doing it. We're getting all kinds of good mail on that topic. You know, when we did Merchant of Venice here, our Shylock was black.
Oh, okay.
Of course, Jewish people are frequently, you know, have some darker colors. So we've been doing it off and on, but there are people that have been contacting me, I guess in my lowly emeritus position. As
can imagine why you'd be getting angry letters.
Well,
oh, no.
I felt we need to bring Saint Genesius in on this discussion, Victor. Patron saint of actors and theater in general. Dear Saint Genesius, loving patron of the theater and its people, we seek your guidance on a reoccurring problem in today's theater, namely colorblind casting. Dear Saint Jen, do you see the wisdom in my advice to overlooked actors? Supposing you had your heart set on playing Othello himself. Be sure you're blonde and blue-eyed, Nordic-looking, but feel discriminated against when a black actor is just handed the part. Is this in the spirit of colorblind casting? I think not. My advice is to immediately... Now, I don't know why I'm laughing. This is very serious. Victor, very serious, and I've been annoyed with myself for laughing. My advice, it's nervous laughter and appalled kind of laughter. My advice is to immediately contact the ACLU. They will, if necessary, shut down this backward-looking theater.
I do not recommend that.
Or form your own company just to show the establishment what you can do on stage. Your white middle-class audience will speak for you. We await your guidance. Thank you, St. Jen. There was our free-for-all. Now we have the quiz.
All right.
And I hope you're ready for it, and I hope you like movies of a bit of a vintage list.
Ooh.
Would you say yes?
I have a mixed relationship with classic movies, so this is going to be interesting.
All right, Will, we're about to find out. Now, if you're successful, your prize is going to be Dracula.
That's amazing!
By Dram Stoker, and I've been failing to mention that we saw you in Dracula at Temple.
Yes, sir, last year.
And loved you in that.
Oh, well, thank
and you
me.
Had that part where you're off to the stage right and
yep.
doing all those crazy things.
Yes, I was Renfield, and I was on a satellite stage that they had stage right, and I was on stage for all of pre-show, all of Act 1, all of intermission, and then all of Act 2, except for like the 10 minutes at the end.
And may I say, you did all of that, all those bits of business so well, and I was tempted to look at you the whole time, but I thought, this is not fair to the rest of the cast.
Well,
anyway,
you.
This had you read it?
I did, in fact, for research, and that was one of the 10 roles that I did where I paid homage to the original.
I see. Then this is a useless gift.
No, actually, I would love that.
All right.
But I need to earn it.
But first. You need to earn it. No, absolutely. All right. Now, all right, what we're going to do is, this is James. James is going to keep score if he can. Leave it time.
I have 2 sheets of paper to look at.
Well, okay, now, here, would you open up? This is yours. If you'd open that up.
And do I start?
Just look at it. Yeah, just
okay.
look at it. Now, ooh. There are 11 responses. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give famous lines from these famous movies. And then you are to look through that list and come up with, we hope, the right answer.
I hope
and
so,
James
too.
Has a pencil, and he's... We've thought about getting a calculator for him, and he's had some trouble with this 1, 2, 3, 4 slash, but I'm sure by all these weeks, he has it down. Or here's your first one. Number one, I'll have what she's having. It was a 1989 movie.
That was number 3, When Harry Met Sally.
Very good.
Billy Crystal.
Very good. All right, number 2. No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
I actually saw this recently. That's number 6, Goldfinger.
1963, very good. Number 3. I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking. Did he fire 6 shots or only 5? 1971.
That is Clint Eastwood as Dirty Harry.
Boy, you're sailing.
Yes.
Very good. Number 4. Number 4, you either surf or you fight. 1979.
I don't know this one.
I think it's surf or
that one.
We'll come back to that one.
Okay.
All right, number 5. Number 5. Meet, this is a giveaway. Meet you in Malkovich in 1 hour.
Ah, that is Being John Malkovich.
1999. Number 6. But I'm funny how? Funny like a clown? I amuse you? I make you laugh? 1990. It's a terrible scene. Ooh, just tragic.
I do not know that one either.
Well, wait, you don't know that one?
No, I don't. Remember, I'm young.
They were playing... cards. Okay, we'll come back to that. Well, James, these might be too bad. Okay, number 7. The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. Greed is right. Greed works. 1987.
That sounds like something Michael Douglas would say in Wall Street.
Wall Street. Very
yes.
good. Okay, number 10. Are you suggesting coconuts migrate? 1975.
That is Monty Python and the Hologram. I would love to be in Spamlot, by the way, which is the musical version.
That's one of our favorite musicals. We saw
Matt
it.
Matt was just in that, Matt.
Oh, yes, she was.
Yeah, but we saw that on Broadway. It's one of my all-time favorite musicals, as it turns
out. How terrible
out.
It is it working with Matt Lamb?
Number 11. 10 ought to do it, don't you think? Do you think we need one more? Do you think we need one more? All right. We'll get one more. 2001.
That is, let's see, 10 plus 1. That's Ocean's 11.
Ocean 11. You're very good at arithmetic. So that was it. He missed two. And what were the answers to those two?
I got three, I know what it is.
Okay. You either surf or you fight Apocalypse Now.
Oh, okay.
All right. And the other one was?
Goodfellas. Goodfellas,
but
yeah.
I'm funny how this is where these are just the most horrible thugs. And this young man is there watching this game and says something to one of these awful guys, mafia types, and says, you make me laugh. Well, he ends up shooting him. It was a terrible scene. Anyway, I think, I just remembered you had to get 10 out of the 11.
Oh.
So I'm afraid.
Thank you for letting me see it.
Well, hold on now. It seems that you didn't ask him at least two of these.
Okay. No, it's yours.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm giving in. I shouldn't have. There have to be certain.
Okay.
Certain rules.
You had me at hello.
That is Jerry Maguire.
Correct.
Oh, I missed that one.
Yeah.
You really deserve the prize now.
Oh, thank
We're giving you Dracula.
And here's a bonus. Are you going to bark all day, little doggy, or are you going to bite?
Hopefully Reservoir Dogs.
That is Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, yes. Thank you, James. I didn't do a very good job of
doing
that whole
you
list.
You did a terrific job.
Thank you. Now, memorable quotes. I've been reading Stephen Fry's new book, More Fool Me.
Mm-hmm.
This is his third autobiography. Are you a big fan of his?
I love Stephen.
His first one, his early years and the middle years, and now it's the last 25 years.
Last 25, hopefully not.
But he's 58 right now, I've noticed. Anyway, I was reading, I said, here's two quotes for this week,
mm-hmm.
Straight from Stephen Fry's mouth. What this is when he was just a kid, when he, in one afternoon, we became a huge theater. Theater became the love of his life. Mm. One Sunday afternoon, age 12, while my father was safely at work in the stable block over the way, I watched on the little television Anthony Asquith's film version of The Importance of Being Earnest. Mm. I vividly recall sitting on an uncushioned wooden kitchen chair, face flushed, mouth half open, simply astonished at what I was watching, and most especially hearing. I had simply no idea that language could do this, that it could dance and trip and tickle and cavort, swirl, beguile, and seduce, that its rhythms, subclauses, repetitions, and colors could excite quite as much as music. Isn't that marvelous?
He'd
been in the country, and he hadn't been exposed to anything.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why it's so important that our schools expose children to these things. Who knows, in a class of 30 or whatever, or an auditorium filled with several hundred, and you're performing some play for children, that there won't be two or three in there that will change their lives. That's the exciting to think about, isn't it?
That's actually marvelous, because when I did do the children's theater, I thought one or two of them have been changed forever because they saw this.
Yes.
That's exactly what I thought.
Well, and then that... and this is why arts...
so important.
I mean, it's kind of a cliche, but for those of us, any politician listening to this podcast... we do hope that you are going to keep them funded. This is the second quote from
you can barely keep the schools funded.
We can't. Yeah, exactly. But we don't want to be cynical tonight, James.
Okay.
All right. This is another quote from Stephen Fry. To an actor, let me assure you, I'm just very interested to see your response to this. To an actor, let me assure you, every single opportunity to open your mouth and perform is to an audience alongside other actors, mm-hmm. is always a fierce and biting adversarial combat. adversarial combat, and do not believe anyone who tells you otherwise. Now, that's quite strong, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, what do you feel? I don't know.
I feel that's aggressive. I would argue that there's as much fun in playing with them and being receptive instead of having it as a combat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As do you think he's meaning the audience and or the and the, I mean the actors, the actors and the audience, or is it just the actors?
Well, Stephen Fry also has his tongue implanted in his cheek, so it might be like a little nod and wink.
Right. Anyway, those are the quotes of the week. Now we come to this new feature in our weekly podcast, James and Victor, called Turning the Tables. I'm going to allow people in the future to ask me one question. anything, what they want to ask me. Let's get James, you go first.
Well, you know, you've been retired for a little bit now. I'm curious, is there a play you would want to direct? Like, come out of retirement to direct?
Well, let me see. There was a play that I've been urging Robin to do. It's Noel Coward. It's one of his one acts called Fume Doke.
Okay.
And it's just a delightful comedy. And that was one I would like. But there's a musical that I've been urging Robin to do. And I'm just sure that she's one day going to find space for it. But I shan't name it because I don't want anyone out there getting the idea and doing it ahead of time. Or do you have a question for me?
I do, in fact. Lynn, why theater for you?
I've always been a storyteller. Mm-hmm. I had my first theater in my garage at age 8 or 9, burlap curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And the theater downstairs, and for many years, it was free. Everything mm-hmm. was free. People would come in here, we'd have wine coolers or sangria. So I served, the neighborhood kids would come in and sit on benches. And then I charged them a dime, and then I charged them a nickel for a drink, and I can't believe I did this or that I'm telling it. And a glass of water, then I had a watercolor set, and I put orange, colored it orange, and the kids sat there and drank, thinking it was an orange drink.
That's amazing.
Is that terrible?
That's wonderful.
Anyway, so why theater? Well, it's been in my life forever.
In theater or being a con artist?
One of the two. I was very active always in high school and college. But fortunately, I had a career that let me continue to be a storyteller. I became a children's librarian.
Mm.
And I taught, for 20 years, I taught storytelling children's literature at a community college in California. And then I told stories frequently in with the children. And then I did what I called book talks. Librarians call book talks. And I really loved doing those. In 30 minutes, I would bring a children's book alive mm-hmm. using all the voices and so on. And it was just tremendously rewarding. Then I was active in community theater in Berkeley, California, and for years. And I was in play reading groups at the Berkeley City Club in Berkeley, and you know, just stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I retired, 21, I moved here 23 years ago and started the theater 21 years ago. And if you listen to this, there's a parallel Victor, on our podcast.
Okay.
There's this one, then there's one called The Oral History. And I talk about all these things that I'm repeating. So I knew I wanted to stay at a theater, and I bought this house sight unseen. My son found it for me, and when I walked downstairs, in California, I'd been planning it, and I said, I hadn't seen it, but he described it to me. And I said, I really want to start a theater. Do you think that he's not in anything to do with theater. He's he's all about guns and stuff. And military and all that. And I said, I want to start a theater. I said, the only way to do it when you're new in a community is to have your own space. And how right I was. And so I walked down there that first day in June of 92 and saw that, began pacing it off. I said, stage here, light booth here. And you saw it all down there earlier tonight. And I said, it'll work.
Yay.
11 and a half by 13. So, so I'm doing something. So answer your question, why theater? Well, it's just me. And I just love meeting people like you.
Okay.
And seeing that the Gilbert is thriving.
Yes.
Under Robin's tutelage. I did it for 18. She's been there. This is the beginning of the fourth for her. And we did really, out of our probably 120 shows, plays, musicals, I'm proud of 110 of them.
There we go.
And,
those are good numbers.
So, turning the tables. There it is. It's a new... Now, any superstitions? Do you know of any superstitions?
Yeah, I know a lot. I know of not to say Macbeth when you're not in that play, in the space. Matt Lamb is actually... He adheres to that because I said it in the audience, and then he went, no, you have to go outside, spin around twice, curse, and spit. So that was, oh, okay, that's alive and well. I know not to whistle on stage because...
No whistling on stage. Mm-hmm. That's a new one.
Okay. Because the stagehands used to be sailors, so they would communicate by a set of whistles because that's how they would do the sails on a boat. So unknowingly, you might walk across stage and then whistle, and then that would signal to the stagehands to drop a sandbag on your head.
And so it could be fatal.
So it could be fatal.
It's one of those superstitions that really could be fatal. Thank you. That's a great new one. Oh, wonderful.
Yay.
Well, I just have to tell, I don't have a new superstition, but I have something that... happened at the Temple Theater. They're doing My Fair Lady.
Mm-hmm.
And it just closed on Sunday.
I saw it opening night.
You were there. Yes, you were able there to just get soup down there. And it was so good, wasn't it?
Yes.
And it, the night that I was there, it was sold out. But I was sitting next to a woman. And I noticed I was here and she was here. Then the seat next to her was vacant. And I said, oh, a vacant seat. She said, oh, that was from my husband, and but he died. And I said, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm very sorry, but couldn't you have brought a friend or a family member? She said, oh, they're all at the funeral.
Thank God.
It's a joke.
That's great.
Anyway.
That's great.
Anyway, now book sharing. You bought a book.
Yes, I did. I bought a play.
A play.
It is called Birdland by Simon Stevens. And it is published by the Royal Court Theatre in London. I think London, or in England. And I love them because they are one of the prominent places where they encourage new plays. Like, I think they only do new plays. Mm-hmm. And I've seen a couple, and I've read some more plays published by them, and it's magnificent. And this book that I brought, I have not actually read, but it's significant to me because one of my very dear friends, his name is Jonathan Fitts, F-I-T-T-S, and he is in L.A. right now, and he is a brilliant playwright. He's one of the smartest people I know. He is pursuing screenwriting right now, actually, he and his writing partner. But he has mentioned to me multiple times that he sees me as one of the characters in this. And Jonathan is the godfather to my resume because I have 15 credits thanks to him.
Oh,
yeah. So I've actually slept with this book right next to my pillow. I'm saving it for a rainy day where I feel that theater, I have no theatrical energy in me or creativity. So then I'm going to read Birdland and go, at least I know one of my friends believes that I can play this role.
Oh, and he was specific. Which one?
I don't remember.
Oh, I see.
But,
yeah. But anyway, so well, good luck. We'll follow that story.
Well, thank you very much.
We'll follow your career and that little anecdote about it. We'll see what happens. Good for you. Birdland by
Simon Stevens.
Simon Stevens.
Now, I don't know if it's inappropriate at all, like graphic violence or nudity or drug use or alcohol. But, disclaimer. Sure. However.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, look forward to that, Victor. James, we come to mailbox. I hear we have a very heartwarming letter addressed to our wonderful Joyce Leib.
Oh, yes. In response to the Joyce Leib episode, we had a letter from a woman named Joan Pledek. Hopefully I'm pronouncing her last name correctly. She says, Joyce is a great sister, great actress, great mother, mother-in-law, wife, just plain great. Saw her in only a few plays. Just don't travel from Pennsylvania as much as I used to. I love her so very much. Break a leg, dear sister. Parentheses, you had better not or never. I'm guessing breaking a leg. In parentheses, Joan.
Oh, was that nice? That's well, nice. When I don't think, did you meet? She came to one. She's tall and gray, has gray hair. And it just turned 80.
I do not know.
Just turned 80. She's one of our finest actresses, and she loved you.
Oh, maybe
loved you, and she, you know, she was in the lobby. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but she probably said something to you. Anyway, she was here reading something from Quilters. That plays Quilters, and I could not go on because I was crying, and everybody was crying.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the kind of actor she was with us 20 years ago in the garden doing the club, a wonderful musical, The Club. And anyway, she's just done dozens of plays for us. Anyway, now we come to 60 seconds. I'm reaching for my stopwatch, Victor.
Oh boy.
And you have 60 seconds. To tell us how you would change theater or improve theater in America, in Pittsburgh, in Atlanta, somewhere.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Sure, let's do this.
All right.
I thought a lot about how to change theater in my life, but I am only 24. I have chosen not to go into theater education yet because I feel that I've not learned everything that I possibly could before I go out and teach. So I feel that I'm not in enough shows or have enough worldly experience to tell others how to run theater. You've been running a theater for 20 years plus, so you have a lot more experience. I do not feel as though I can tell you how to change theater. But I would say that it's called play for a reason. So play while you're doing theater. And sometimes it's really hard, but if you have a story you need to tell, then there should be more people out there who need to tell their stories. And sometimes they have stage fright or they feel like they can't, but there will be an audience who will listen to those stories. So I heard that.
All right, very good. 63 seconds.
Ah,
all right, very... you're not going to be penalized.
Did you go over your amount of seconds when you spent half your seconds saying, I couldn't possibly answer this question?
I have no idea.
Well, that was very clever. Now, all right, well, that's everything you said was of value, Victor. Birthdays. You're coming to birthdays. We have some celebrated birthdays. This week, Jeremy Irons was born this day in 1948. This means he is approaching 70, is he not? John Houseman, born this day in 1902. George Gershwin, this day in 1898. And we have some local celebs, don't we?
Yes, director and actress Sandra Epperson, who's done some shows with the Gilbert Theater and the Sandhills Theater. She has a birthday that's actually today, the day of our recording. And upcoming birthdays, we don't have any... Well, we have a few, but by then we'll have a new episode. We can talk
for next
those.
Week. And your birthday is coming up next week. We want to honor you in a number of ways with a fresh tie-dyed shirt, for example. I really am joking. James looks fabulous this evening in a beautiful charcoal suit and a beautiful shirt and red and a blue tie. And
it's a tie-dye tie.
tie-dye tie.
Looking very, very sharp. Call board.
Oh, yes.
Let's start, first of all, and we want Victor, you to tell us, what remains of your fabulous show?
What remains is in how many shows are left?
Performances.
Okay. We have a show coming up on Friday, yeah, Friday, October 2nd, and that's at 8 o'clock. And then we have two shows on Saturday, October 3rd, and that's at 2 o'clock and then at 8 o'clock. And then we have our final show, which is Sunday, October 4th, and that is at 2 o'clock.
Well, thank you. I can't urge everybody enough, strongly enough, to see it. You'll be very glad you did. James, what else is coming up?
Well, right now, Man of La Mancha is still running at the Cape Fear Regional Theater. It's running till October 11th. I think the Temple is doing something, too.
Well, they just closed My Fair Lady, as I say. They've started rehearsals for The Addams Family.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and that's not opening until
Halloween.
So I believe that's all we got right now.
All right. But I know a number of our friends are in rehearsal. I know James Dean is starting rehearsal what was it? He told me yesterday, I forget. But anyway, all kinds of activity this fall, of course. Well, we've had this listener challenge for some weeks now, asking the question, who is George Spelvin?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know by chance?
I do not know who George is.
All right, George Spelvin. Someone did answer this correctly this week. Came to us through the miracle of the internet,
mm-hmm.
or the cloud, whatever that is. And his name is Drew Paskovich. He hails from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And he, Drew, congratulations. You guessed the right answer, which is George Spelvin is the name people in productions, actors, who want to remain uncredited. Say you have a big part in the play,
mm-hmm.
and yet you also have a walk-on. You know, sometimes actors have to do two and three things in a play. And rather than have your name listed three times, you would say George Spelvin. There.
You know. That's clever.
And so he guessed that. And Drew, your fabulous gift will be in the mail. Snail mail.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as we get your mailing address. And James has written you, emailed you asking for that. I know you're going to love it. The minute I figure out what it is. But no, it's a fabulous gift. I want to thank our guest, Victor Rivera. Been a delight to have you here, Victor.
Thank you so much.
And I knew it would be seeing you on stage. Usually, people, sometimes they surprise you. People will be on stage and appear to be one way, and then you'll get them on the microphone and they clam up.
Yeah.
And anyway, you find yourself scrambling around, like you say, you know, doing extra things on stage to get response out of people.
Mm.
Anyway, that's been very, very few, and you've been one of the great ones.
Oh, thank you.
But now I want to say to you, this is Lynn Pryor asking James to dim the lights and go to black while I urge you all to find a play to see this week. So until next Thursday, thank you for your company. Now, Victor, we are going to have a P.S., a pod script. And it's this question. I'm asking you a question. Maybe you'll know the answer.
Okay.
What is the universal question?
I don't know.
What is the universal question you don't know? All right. Most people I've talked to don't know what the... I do know the answer to
mm-hmm.
it. And it's going to save the world. But I'm not going to share it until I built more suspense. We're even talking about bumper stickers for heaven's
sake. Ooh, nice.
We'll see if the budget... But we'll see. If James can get a few more sponsors, we might have bumper stickers. But the question, what is the universal question? So stay tuned to this in months to come.
Okay.
Victor up there or in Georgia or wherever you happen to be. On tour, whatever. We're going to follow your career with great interest.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys are.